My name is Walter Dickinson. I am the programming coordinator for something called the Toronto Cartoonist Workshop. We offer courses to people interested in working in mainstream comics. And we usually do this out of public spaces, but coming in fall of this year, we are going to have permanent space at College and Bathurst. So please, if you can get a flyer from the Kathleen back there, she'll give you one with that information. Check out our website. In collaboration with the Toronto Comic Con Fan Appreciation event, we're doing some programming on process today, and we are lucky enough to have Ernie Chan with us to talk about his career in inking and penciling. Ernie began his professional life at 20 in the Philippine comics industry. In 1970, he moved to the U.S. and began his long career in American comics with some short mystery stories. He's perhaps best known for his run on Batman for DC Comics and his long association with Conan for Marvel, where he both inked the legendary artist John Buscema and penciled and finished work for the Conan comic strip. In addition to Batman for DC, Ernie produced work on Claw the Destroyer, Sandman, Swamp Thing, and Jonah Hex. At Marvel, he also worked on Doctor Strange, Dracula, Daredevil, Doc Savage, Thor, Fantastic Four, Hulk, Power Man, Iron Fist, King Cole, and John Carter of Mars. Retired since 2002, Ernie is a prolific artist of commission artwork, which often focuses on the raw physicality of the barbarian character and the sensuality of the female form. Let's welcome Ernie Chan. Awesome. To start off with, Ernie comes from a rich comics background. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Filipino comics. A major personality in the industry there is a fellow by the name of Francisco Cochin. And I'm just wondering if you were influenced by Francisco?
Yes, very much.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's like Buscema in the Philippines.
Actually, I'll just give you one of these if I can.
He's like John Buscema. He's with seniors, muscles and stuff. And he's number one. Considered the father of Filipino comics artists.
Can you tell us a little bit about? Let's make sure this is on. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's get this closer to Ernie. Sorry, Ernie.
Okay.
Can you tell me a little bit about the Filipino industry and some of the creators that you grew up reading and who inspired your work?
Yeah. Francisco B. Cochin is my number one idol. And I didn't apprentice for him, but I studied under him, and he taught me a lot. And he's the number one illustrator in the Philippines. Aside from him, there's Nestor Redondo, Alfredo Alcala, Alex Nino, and several others.
And you mentioned Alcala and Nino. These gentlemen would have been a generation before you.
Cochin, Nestor Redondo, and Alcala is a generation before me. Alex Nino is my generation.
Ah, excellent.
Yeah.
And were you able to observe some of these artists as a young man working in the industry?
Yes, very much. Because mostly we would gather and work in a room, like a studio, and we'd pick at each other's work.
Okay. Would it be like back in the 40s with Marvel style, where you were all in a bullpen, or would you work out of your home studios, or...?
We work in, whoever has a bigger room in his house, we go to...
We'd all go to his house.
Yeah.
Okay, that's wonderful then.
Yeah.
Cochin, talking about his work and what you were learning from his work, now he's obviously a master of pen and ink.
Yeah.
Was it mostly pen or brush he was
brush.
Using? It's brushwork.
Mostly brushwork. But he outlines in pen, and then he finishes in brush.
Mm-hmm.
And he has very bold strokes in brush.
And what sort of pen would he be using?
Oh, any kind of like a little flexible pen. We prefer some, flexible one.
So it'd be like a steel tip drawing
right.
pen?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for the brushes, would he use like the traditional Kolinsky sables or?
We use Chinese brushes.
Chinese brushes?
Yeah,
you're kidding
me? Because they're cheap. We cannot afford American brush.
That's fantastic.
It's
because
costs 10 times more.
Apparently, Will Eisner also got all of his studio mates to use the Chinese brushes because they were so cheap.
They were cheap and they are good to handle because it's bamboo handle and it's good to grip. Unlike the sable brush or the gumbrattler brush,
it's a hard grip.
Hard grip.
So did you, in terms of utilizing the bamboo brushes, did it take you a while to get used to controlling them? Because they're a little bit harder than the American brushes.
It's easy to control because the way Chinese use those brushes, they would hold it vertical like that.
Like this?
Like that. Like that.
Ah, okay.
Mostly we use... the way we regularly handle the brush is a little bit inclined like that.
Right.
But the Chinese, the calligraphy, they use it for calligraphy, and they would handle it vertical, and they go like this.
So just so everybody knows, Ernie is saying that with the Chinese brushes, it's actually a straight up and down that you're actually holding, as opposed to the American style of brush, which is more of an incline.
Yeah.
So a completely different level of control, different muscles in the hand and everything
right.
as well.
Right.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. So we talked about Nino, Cochin,
Alcala.
Okay.
Yeah.
And those particular illustrators, would they have been looking at old pen and ink guys like J.C. Cole and pen and ink artists of the 20s?
Yeah. J.C. Cole was the one with wood carving stuff.
Wood carving stuff? Raphael Kent, maybe?
No, the one...
Albert Durer?
Similar to Albert Durer. Albert Durer is like mostly wood carved.
Right, yeah. Right.
The name escapes me.
Escapes, yeah. Okay. But there were a number of sort of classical American illustrators at that time.
Right.
Guys like James Montgomery Flagg and Charles Dana Gibson and
right.
all of those people. Okay.
Like the later one, like Alex Raymond.
Raymond?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Hal Foster?
Yeah.
Okay, so the very, very classical, traditional. With your own art education, did you go to a traditional art school? Like, did you study fine art painting and drawing, or did you apprentice with one of the artists?
Yeah, I apprenticed with Tony de Zuniga.
Really?
Yeah.
Tony de Zuniga?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the Philippines.
Wow.
And then when I came over here, I apprenticed with him again.
Again? Did he come to the States first? Or?
He came here 1 year ahead of me.
Oh, fantastic.
And then when I came over, I got in touch with him, and he... offer me the apprenticeship again.
Oh, that's marvelous.
I took it right away.
Now, would this have been around the time that this piece, 1973?
Yeah, this is like a piece that I...
I think this was for Ghosts for DC.
Right, yeah.
And this shows the traditional Philippine style, doesn't
right.
it? Because there's a lot of Cochin and some of the other artists in that particular piece.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the control is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be around the time that you would have been working with Tony.
Right after I left Tony. When I apprenticed with him again here in the States, I only stayed about 3 months with him.
Okay.
And then I went on my own, and this is one of those.
One of the early jobs. And this is both your pencils and inks, am I correct?
Right.
Fantastic.
The layout and everything.
Next one we've got. You did a lot of inking of other artists around the same time too.
This is Gene Colan.
This is Gene Colan. Yeah, this is from an early Daredevil in 1972.
Yeah.
So this would have been pretty early on in your career.
This is like
in American comics, I mean.
This is like I worked like a year in DC, and then I started going to Marvel, and this is one of my early Marvel jobs. Inking. Before I inked Mishima, I started.
You started working with Colin.
Colin, and
they put you on some pretty big guys right away.
Right.
Because next we've got you on.
This is like Brunner.
It's Frank Brunner. Frank, yeah. Brunner. 1973 from Marvel premiere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. It's a good synthesis of styles. They put you on very, very physical artists who did very, you know, a lot of twisting
they're
figures and things like
they're
that.
They're very good penciler.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
Were there any challenges for you working with these guys, or?
Pretty much, not that much, because they're like, their pencil is very detailed and very finesse. So all I have to do is just follow what they have.
Now that's not so much the case with John, right?
John, at first, it's the same. Like he did full pencils, and that's how he does his rendering. So I pretty much followed. But later on, through the years, he started just doing breakdown.
Right.
Breakdown just like rough sketch with just outline.
Indications of
yeah.
where the forms are. Yeah. Now this would have been 1973, so this would have been one of the first jobs that you did with
John,
right?
Yeah, one of the color Barbarian book. Yeah.
Now, I've got some more here.
This is like, black and white. I don't know. I don't remember.
I believe...
It's color.
Yeah, this is from one of the comic books, actually. Yeah. This is from 76.
Yeah, yeah.
So you guys are really sort of synthesizing your styles here. Mm-hmm. Would this have been full pencils, or would this be something that you're really embellishing a lot?
I think that's full pencil.
That's full pencil still?
Yeah.
I mean, you can see from the piece, there's a lot of really rich detail.
Yeah, I think most of the Barbarian color, Conan color Barbarian books mm-hmm. are mostly full pencil. It's only in the black and white, but Savage Sword, where he starts to do just the layouts.
Now, would you be using the Chinese brush to
no,
do this?
No, I'm using this kind of brush.
This is a
Japanese Pentel brush.
Japanese Pentel. You would have been using a Japanese Pentel back then?
Yeah.
Really? I didn't even know they made them at that point. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So is this your tool of choice over the years?
Yes.
For anybody who can't see it, it's
it's not sable. It's,
it's a microfiber, right?
It's
a synthetic.
Like synthetic.
And is this refillable, this particular one? Or
it's refillable.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I don't think they still sell this. I don't know.
Did you buy them in bulk at one point?
Ah,
good man, good man. Because they keep changing the quality of the art materials constantly.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Got a few more Buscema pieces here. This is one that I think Vernie gave out.
Some of them.
Everybody should have a copy of this. I hope if you don't, I'll give you one afterwards. I think this is an example of his layouts, right? This is what you would have been traditionally given later.
This is like a little more detail. This is like he played with it, and he semi-detailed it a little bit. You can see the shield is not detailed, mm-hmm. and the axe is not detailed, and the right foot is not detailed. But he pretty much rendered it halfway.
Right.
Actually, the layout is like the way the shield are and the axe and the foot are. Those are the layout type.
Right, it's like the shield and the right foot there. Just very, very quick indications for you.
Yeah.
He would do the storytelling, you would do the full penciling, and doing inks on top.
Right.
Now, I had read somewhere online that you had studied with John. That's not the case, though, right? You had basically just worked with him on the comic. You weren't part of that particular school he had in New York or anything.
He started the school, but I didn't, enrolled in his school, but he did a couple of sessions in the office of Marvel.
Right.
I attended one class in that.
And what sort of stuff would he have discussed in that particular class? It was a chalk talk, am I correct?
Yeah, it's a chalk talk, and he explained how he approached a figure when he does, and then how he executed with his speed. and how he's like pinpoint that what he wants to do right away.
Would you say he was a good teacher? Like,
He's a good teacher, but he's not as patient as Joe Kubert.
Right. Okay.
Joe Kubert is more patient. Like he really understands the student. Buscema is like, if you don't get it, sorry.
Okay.
That's the way he does
it. I understand. Yeah. Did you get a chance to study with Kubert, or have you taught at his school?
He invited me one time to
teach.
Not to teach, but to like demonstrate a little bit.
Oh, wonderful!
Yeah.
So you got a chance to know him and talk to him about his style and process and stuff like that. It's interesting because both of these artists are very intuitive, and sometimes it's hard for people that are that intuitive and that talented to articulate their process. Would Kubert or John, would they block down the figure in basic shapes first, or did they just start sketching right into the figure?
They start doing it right away.
They know it so well, right?
Yeah, they instinctively put down what is in their head right in there. So if you a little bit slow, you don't know how to catch
what it is he's trying to get across. Here's another nice example of the two of them working together. This is a piece from Savage Sword where you, I believe, were doing all the tones as well. Am I correct?
Right. Yeah.
And this is probably late enough in the game that you also would have been doing most of the pencils as well at this point. Am I correct?
I pencil and ink some of the issues.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now this one, they specifically list John as doing the breakdowns.
So yeah, this is one of
this
those
is your
breakdowns.
Finishes, right. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Now, so you've done tons of penciling too. Can you describe your process a little bit for that? Like, would you do small thumbnails, or did you start working on the paper right away?
When I get the script from Roy Thomas, it's mostly like a plot.
Right.
When it's a plot, I do my own page breakdown. And if I do that, I do thumbnails.
Do thumbnails? What size would you work? Very, very small or half page?
Half of the bound paper page.
Okay.
Like I would fold it like this. And, page one, page two, page three, page four.
Wonderful. Yeah. Okay. So about half of an 8.5 by 11 page, and you would do them that size. Now, would you take that and blow it up on a photocopier or an artograph?
No, I just based the framing and the page layout, and then I finalize it
on the large size.
Large size.
But you wouldn't bother blowing this up on a photocopier. You would just eyeball it onto the larger page.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, would you very intuitively build up the figures similar to what we discussed with Buscema, but no basic shapes and stuff like that. You're past that point.
Yeah.
Okay,
you
I got
just
you.
Jump into it.
Now with your inking, you've got a lot of textures, beautiful textures. In the previous one, we had, the shield had wonderful sort of metallic look to it. Yeah. The rocks have their own sort of quality.
Yeah.
The trees as well. Would you do any drawing from life to understand these sorts of things?
It helps.
Yeah?
It helps. You observe, and then if you sketch it, embed it in your mind. If you like taking notes, it's like taking notes. You take it from nature, and you sketch it in.
So you've got a whole sketchbook of stuff that you can refer to later then?
Not so much. Only when I need to memorize it. Like,
right, so once you do it, you've got the texture down and you've got it for the rest of your life sort of thing. Okay. So probably early on in your career, you did a little bit of that. And then by this point, you're just doing it intuitively, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you would start inking something like this, is there a specific spot you would start with? Like, would you do the outlines of the figure first?
Yeah, everything is outlined in and form, and then you decide where you want to put the texture, and put the shades, and put the details and everything. Once you get the outline, it's easy for you to play how you want to play.
Right. So then once you've got the outline, you would start building forms. Now, you're with your lines in a lot of this, I mean, some artists like Alex Toth, they don't care about form.
Yeah.
He's all about shape design.
Yeah.
You're building up the forms with lines touching over the surfaces. Am I correct?
Alex Toth, when he does it, he would lay it out. In his mind, he just wanna place where he wants to place the blacks.
The blacks, okay.
Yeah, and to leave the white wherever he wants to leave. And he doesn't like concerned about the half tone.
Right.
In between.
Right.
In between the black and the white. So his style is fast because
he doesn't have to worry about all the rendering.
Yeah, no rendering, no half tone, just black and white.
Very simple shape design. Okay.
In here, in the way I do it, it's divided into three, the white, the half tone, and then the black.
Right.
You
so
play.
The half tone would be like the area in between as it turns from light to dark, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And would you start with the figures first and then do the other elements?
No,
you start
outline everything.
Everything.
The outline, the figure, the background, the objects, everything. Outline. And then the rendering, you can start anywhere you want to render.
Anywhere you want to render. So, I mean, traditionally being right, are you right-handed or left-handed?
Right-handed.
Right-handed, so you might start in the top left and work
also,
your way down.
When I start rendering, I would warm up on those less important things like those rocks and those trees.
Okay.
Now, as I warmed up, I start to go to the sensitive area like the head, the figure. That way, you don't start right away on the figure when you're still warming
when
up.
When you're cold.
Yeah, when you're cold.
It's an amazing piece. Would you, for stuff in the foreground, would you use thicker outlines?
Thicker blacks.
Thicker blacks, so that they pop forward, right?
Right.
And then things in the far back, lighter lines, so that it recedes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you're putting the most detail and the heaviest darks in the figures because you want the eye to go there, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. How would you... There's not a huge amount of black in this, but at what point would you spot your blacks in there?
The blacks is as you worked on it, and then as you start to complete it, you will decide. Oh, I better go back to the ones that has less black and make it heavier.
Right, right. So intuitively, at the end, you'll say, okay, I want the eye to go here. This is where I'm going to put my black.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can sense that, oh, you need more blacks in this part, so you put in more blacks in that part.
Fantastic. So it's very intuitive for you.
Yeah.
Now, when you're doing the initial sketches, the thumbnails, will you lay in areas where you want the blacks?
Yeah.
So you get a sense of that?
Yeah.
And your thumbnails, would they be very, like, similar to the Basima drawing, those parts that you had shown me?
Yeah.
So just very sort of quick suggestions of forms then.
One good artist is good in that is... Mike Mignola.
Mike Mignola, okay.
He's like Alex Toth.
He's the classic of just laying in those shapes and basic outlines, right?
Yeah, he knows where the black should go and just leave whatever highlight or whatever.
But he has no rendering. He's not into form or anything like that.
Yeah, that's what's good about his drawing.
Oh, you like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that brings up another question. Who are some of the artists that you like today who are producing?
Yeah, Mike Mignola. Gene Collin is very good in the blacks.
He's brilliant, Do you know Jose Garcia Lopez's work?
Yeah.
Yeah? Do you like his work?
His work is more formula.
Okay.
Formula oriented, like... like if you draw a Superman or a superhero, you would base it on the character guide.
Right, right.
So he's like, he never miss because he's basing it on the guide and the formula.
Right. You guys didn't have character guides back then, though, did you? They didn't give you like a sheaf of things. You would just look at the previous artists
right.
and say, okay, yeah. I'm going to do my own style with this character.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some other inkers that are producing right now. I'll just throw out some names. Kevin Nolan, do you know his work?
Yeah, Kevin Nolan's work is very tight.
Right.
He's like very precision. He's like, he doesn't like do bold stroke.
Right.
He would control his line.
He's all very much pen,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
He likes a very tight sort of yeah. rendered surface. Okay.
It's nice in a way, but it's like...
It's a little bit dead?
Yeah, it's like he doesn't want to miss, so his line is more precision and very tight and very mechanical.
Very mechanical,
yeah.
Okay. Let's take a look at a few more pieces that we got by here. This is a nice color piece from the 70s.
This is like a convention piece.
This was a convention piece.
Yeah.
So you would do this just sitting there
right.
chatting with convention goers just like here. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean that's pretty amazing. And the interesting thing is there's a lot of change in the style from the first piece that we showed
uh-huh.
that was very influenced by the Filipino school. And this, you've kind of merged some of Buscema's influence, too.
Yeah,
it has a lot of life as well.
Yeah, and Frazetta.
And Frazetta.
Yeah.
Actually, that's another very good question. I wanted to ask you about, you do a lot of current commissions featuring barbarians and beautiful women. Is Frazetta and Boris Vallejo, are they an influence? Are the books of Robert Howard an influence at all?
The Frazetta is the most influential.
Is the most influential.
Vallejo is like, he's already a derivation from Frazetta, so.
Right.
I don't very much pay
he's
attention.
He's twice removed.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like a middleman.
Why he's a middleman for the Frazetta style. I gotcha. But again, Frazetta, very much a classical pen and ink artist. So you must love the stuff that he did in the 50s on all those wonderful EC comics
oh, yeah.
and things like that, uh-huh. Johnny Comet.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And here, Ernie took over doing the Conan strip for a while, am
yeah.
I correct?
John started it like he did 3 weeks of it, and then he gave it up because he find it like too tedious doing it and doesn't make as much money from it than regular comic book.
Right.
So I took over from him, and I lasted about 2 years.
Before the deadline started to kill you?
That one, and plus the income, I make more money from doing comic book.
Really?
Than doing it because I thought it would pick up, because syndicated strip, if more newspaper pick it up, you get more money.
Right.
But it wasn't picked up. It survived.
Right. So it would have been a 200 or 300 papers at that time or that many?
50.
Or 50 papers.
50.
Wow. Okay.
It's 200. If it's more than 100 or 200, I would stick with it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of deadlines would you have for someone? No, this is a Sunday. Am I correct, this one?
That's a Sunday.
That's a Sunday. So you would have to do 5 days plus, or 6 days plus the Sunday?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you have to be 3 weeks in advance.
3 weeks in advance?
Yeah.
Okay, so you had to, before you even started the strip, the strip even started being
printed,
published, you already had 3 weeks
right.
in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, it's an amazing transition.
I like in doing it because Roy gives me the freedom of the breaking it down into frames that I want to break it down.
Right.
And he takes over from there.
Okay, so you were doing this Marvel style too,
yeah,
then?
He
would just give you a plot outline?
Yeah.
You would design it for him?
Yeah, I would send him the rough sketch, and he would apply those captions and dialogues. And then either I letter it or somebody would letter it, and then I would finalize it.
Now, how did you feel about that? I mean, the Marvel style is traditionally a lot of work for the artist.
I like working that way.
Yeah? You don't like the full script then because it dictates too much?
Yeah, it dictates too much, and you don't have your own creativity in storytelling.
Right.
How long would that
have taken? The Sunday?
Yeah.
Less than a day.
Less than a day to do that entire...
Yeah, that whole page.
Well, that's actually a good question then. At the peak of your career, how many pages were you probably doing in a day then?
Like the Savage Sword, a 50 pages book.
Right.
I had to finish that in 3 weeks.
In 3 weeks?
Yes. Or less.
You realize the artists today, if they had those deadlines, they would cry and...
They won't survive.
They won't survive, no. Most artists today can't seem to make a monthly schedule.
Yes.
So it's changed considerably.
Yeah.
Now this is actually a commission you did, right?
Yeah. It's a spread. It's like two pages of 11 by 17.
Right.
And it's an interesting one. Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about the composition here?
How did you ever get that sketch?
I found these on a site called Comic Art Fans, and it's obviously a collection of art collectors, but they quite often put up all their favorite pieces.
Yeah, because the one who commissioned me that, I must have sent him that rough.
Yeah?
Before I inked it. Usually when I'm commissioned to do a piece, I don't usually give them a pencil stage.
Right. But because this one was so large and complex?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to give him one like that. He gave me all the scenes from the book that he has in his collection. And then he let me decide how I want to put it all in one page. The girl there is that.
From the DC comic book?
Yeah. Have you got the finish of that?
I do, as a matter of fact.
Very
I
good.
Got them both.
Very
yes,
good.
Sir.
Yeah.
It's actually a pretty amazing piece. Now the pencil that you did, would that have been sort of the level of finish you would have done for your own pencils when you were doing
pretty
stuff
much.
For DC?
Yeah, pretty much. If I am... To be intended to be the one to
do the inks.
Okay. If somebody else is going to ink it, I'll put in more rendering in pencil. But
let's go back to that.
Yeah.
And this must have taken more than a day, I hope.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fun doing it.
No, it's a wonderful sort of circular composition. You've got this the storytelling in the panels around.
Plus, Conan is like, he's not sleeping there. He's dead.
He's dead, is he?
He just drank the poison from the goblet that was on the floor. He drank that, and he was poisoned. So he's dead right there.
Now, would the collector have given you... reference for some of the characters, like for the death character?
Yes.
Okay.
The death character and those other giants, like there and the elephant and those other people.
So just so everybody knows, Ernie is doing commissions here at the show, so you can come by his table.
How much would something like that cost,
Ernie? That one is $600.
Which is incredibly reasonable.
Pencil.
It's ridiculously reasonable.
Yeah.
Now, I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, but do you use much photo reference when you do figure work, or have you learned the figure so thoroughly that you don't require that anymore?
I only require photo reference if it's like a specific action that I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm like allowed to do... The angle, the action itself, I don't really need any photograph or reference.
So you've never really utilized that as part of like, for example, somebody like L. Williamson, he was big on using photo reference, and you can see that to a certain extent in the work. But you wouldn't utilize that at all in the same way.
If it's not necessary, I don't have to.
Okay. What about, say, we gave you a script that had some, you know, foreign country and stuff
that
like that? Then you'll look all that stuff up.
That I need.
Were you a huge collector of books for that sort of thing, or would you start a reference file, or?
Right now, I just Google it.
You just Google it. Google pictures. Okay, so you're the old artist morgue. You've done away with that. Now it's all electronic,
it's
right?
More electronic.
Okay.
Now.
And starting to get into some of the covers. Yeah, this is Kane, yeah.
Yeah.
This is from the early 70s, too.
Yeah, I like Gil Kane.
Now, what is it you like about Gil Kane?
He's more to the point. The angle he's drawing is more to the point that he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
Just like this one, you can see the figure that was in the tomb or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to do that kind of angle.
The foreshortening?
Yeah. Also, it's upside down. Look on it upside down. You know, the figure lying down.
Right. Looking at now, he was a big proponent of Bridgman, am I correct? George Bridgman, the anatomist?
Yeah. He is like, his anatomy is more like Bridgman anatomy.
Now, when you were studying anatomy, was there anybody that you studied?
I pick up a little bit here and there, but mostly Buscema.
Mostly Buscema.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he was an impeccable anatomist himself.
Right.
Yes.
He's good.
Okay. Do you have anything else you'd like to say about inking this piece? Like, was it fun working on Gil Kane?
Yeah, it's fun working on him because he pretty much knows where he wants his black. Like, it's like you can see the black just wrap around the two figures.
Right.
So your eye is centered into it.
Now, would he have... I know in some contemporary pencilers, they use an X to mark the blacks. Would he have either shaded in the blacks?
He would shade it.
He would shade it in.
Yeah.
Now, would you deviate or change that at all? Like, was it up to you as an inker to
When I feel like deviating, I would, but if it doesn't need to be deviating, I would stay with
it. You would stick with it, okay.
With it.
So maybe with a newer penciler, somebody who's less developed, you might add a little bit more stuff, but somebody like Gil Kane, you would just, you know, give it your usual job and not change too much.
Yeah.
Okay. This one is actually your pencils, and Fred Carrillo, I think, is the inker.
Okay.
How did you feel about being inked by other people, given the fact that you're such an incredible inker yourself?
It's interesting because you can see the difference they had when they were doing it from what I had in my mind. And I would learn from a little bit from them if they're a good inker. Like Carrillo is a good inker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you like about this piece that he did from the over your pencils? Would he have added anything? Would he have spotted different blacks?
He pretty much followed what I had, and he does like doesn't deviate away from me, you know. And like Rudy Nebres would deviate from what I penciled, and he would use his delicate brushwork.
Right, because he has such a signature style, it would overpower your work.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody like Carrillo,
pretty
he's
much,
very understated, is that correct?
Right.
Okay. And here we get, you did a huge run on Batman, if I'm correct. This is an early cover by you on the book.
Is that my own inking? I think...
I think that's Coletta inking
Coletta,
you, actually,
yeah.
Which is kind of an interesting one. How did you feel about his inks on your stuff?
It's like Carrillo. He's like pretty much follow what I had.
So he wouldn't change a lot?
Doesn't change much.
I think you must have had pretty tight pencils on that.
Yeah, I do.
So there wasn't much room for him to deviate, because I've seen other jobs by the same artist.
Yeah.
Where he will change things significantly.
You're talking Coletta?
Yes, yes.
He would deviate. Maybe if he's inking some others, maybe he would deviate.
Now here's the only sample I was able to find of your pencils online, actually.
This is like a layout by Carmine.
That's Carmine's layout?
Yeah.
Okay.
Most of my
DC So this is Carmine's layout, your pencils, and then Dick Giordano's inks then. Is that correct?
Is that Dick Giordano?
Yeah, it's signed by Giordano on the right-hand side there, yeah.
Okay. Dick Giordano is a good inker. He and Neil Adams are a good team.
So the piece on the left,
That's
Carmine would have given you a loose layout for that, and then you tightened it up? Is that
right.
correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Was that traditional with a lot of the covers that you did?
Yeah, mostly.
That Carmine would knock out the thumbs?
Yeah, would knock out the thumbs.
Okay.
And
would that be the same for the Batman, or would that
most
be something?
Most of it. Not all of it, most of it.
Was there anybody else at DC at that time that also did a similar type of thing in the art department? Like, because you were one of the main cover artists during that time. I think there was yourself, Nick Carty, Giordano was on a ton of covers.
Yeah, so. Carmine liked the way I finished his layouts.
Right.
And so, and I also the speed I'm doing it, like I would turn it in the next day.
Wow.
So sometimes it's two or three in one day.
And you must have been in New York at the time, too, right? You were living in New York?
I was in Queens.
Queens, okay.
I would just take the subway.
So you just take the subway into town, collect your paycheck, get the next job, right?
Yeah.
So you were working out of your house, but not at DC.
Okay. So if I, like, visit the DC office, I would pass by two or three editors.
Mm-hmm.
They would spot me and they would call me and then, I need this tomorrow, can you do this?
Fantastic. And you would, of course, not say no, because
I won't say
you
no.
need the work, right? You're a freelancer.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Sometimes it's two or three of them would do it the same day, they want it the next day.
So did you pull a lot of all-nighters back in those days?
Yeah.
Not much sleep.
No, actually, there's some sleep, but some of them are not, like, difficult. Like, this one is simple, you
mm-hmm.
know, there's not much background, so it's not that hard to do.
Right.
The thing that's hard to do is, like, if Batman or Superman is flying from a shot from shot going down, and you would see those street buildings and
all
cars.
All the perspective and all that
those
stuff,
are difficult.
Sure.
Those are hard
or something
to do.
With a lot of detail, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is more like a poster style,
yeah,
right?
It's just simple.
It's very simplified.
Yeah.
And this, I'm not exactly sure when this is done, but this is a late,
looks
like the 70s, yeah. It looks like Jonah Hex, but I think that's the Rawhide Kid, actually. Now this one actually has a slightly different look to it, because there's a lot of heavy blacks on
that.
But I can only find your name on the piece, so
I inked that much.
So here you're shooting for something a little bit different, because the lighting is very intense, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't even remember this piece until now, when you show it.
It's another great one for DC. Now, in terms of subject matter, what was your favorite stuff to draw? I mean, did you prefer the barbarian stuff because it was sort of more naturalistic figures, or did you like the superhero material?
I like the barbarians.
The barbarians?
Yeah.
I think that was John's favorite, too, he always mm-hmm. said, too, because he didn't really like drawing the guys in costumes quite so much.
Yeah.
And also, it's a little bit more similar to Renaissance art, the whole tradition of the figure, right?
Mm-hmm. But I won't refuse doing other stuff.
You wonder if John was doing other stuff, or you wonder.
He sometimes would refuse doing some stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
He would not take jobs.
Yeah.
Wow. That's an amazing position to be in.
This piece is good too. Yeah. You see the black in the background.
That's an amazing composition. Yeah. It
brings out the figure right out there.
Claw. Now you did interiors on this book too, am I correct?
Yes, yes. But that is Infantino's layout.
That's another Infantino layout, okay.
Yeah.
Now, here's a sample of Ernie's commission.
It up. The guy who...
Oh, the guy just at this show?
Pick it up.
No kidding.
Half an hour ago.
Okay.
Is that here?
It's already online.
Ken Dormer?
I think we got this from... I got this maybe from your site or something.
Yeah.
But...
We just picked it up today.
Is this a lot of stippling in terms of the
cross-hatch.
Textures?
Cross-hatch.
That's all cross-hatching. Okay.
My cross-hatch is not like this way and that way.
Right.
My cross-hatch is like...
All over the place.
Yeah.
It's a very...
Direction. Yeah.
Okay. So traditionally, cross hatching is one stroke or a set of strokes going in one direction, and then another crossing it directly across. Ernie's just saying that it's more of an all over movement. So.
Is that all brush,
Ernie? The cross hatch is pen. That is after I put in the blacks with the brush. And then I would finalize it with the cross hatch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So you...
The cross is there. Is I outline it in pen.
Right.
And then I blacken with the brush.
Okay.
And then I go back with the pen with the cross hatch and with the half tones.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Now, that's a... So your style is slightly different than when you started out in the industry.
Yeah.
Because you would start with the outlines, then you would build up mm-hmm. all the textures and strokes, and then put the blacks in last.
Yeah.
And here you're saying you're doing the outlines first, then blocking in your blacks, and then doing...
I keep on experimenting.
All the time?
Yeah, all the time.
Okay. Do you still... do you go to the museums a lot and look at fine art?
If I have time.
If you have time? Okay.
But I would go look through it on the internet.
Online?
Yeah.
And you probably have a huge collection of art books and comics and things like that, too, that you're inspired by?
Yeah, I do.
Maybe less comics, but more art books.
Yeah, more art books.
Right.
Like Dean Cornwell.
Dean Cornwell, okay.
Yeah.
What other traditional illustrators are influences on you, then? Actually, this is a really interesting piece. I think you have this in the portfolio out there. Because I was trying to look for color work that you had done, and this is...
That is on the pastel paper.
That's pastel?
No, that is pastel paper, and then use color pencils.
Colored pencils,
yeah.
Okay. Because this reminds me a lot of old paperback covers,
uh-huh.
you know, like from the 50s and 60s, those sort of, you know, single figure drawings of gorgeous women that Robert McGinnis would do.
Yeah, Robert McGinnis.
So, getting back to illustrators, people like Dean Cornwell, what about Robert Fawcett and Albert Dorn?
He's
guys
one,
like that?
Albert Dorn, yeah.
What do you like about those classic illustrators?
They are like very traditional. They stick to close to reality, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't.
Not too stylized.
Not too stylized.
Okay. We're back to the beginning. And I think...
Time's up?
We are at the end of our time, Ernie.
Yeah, any question or something?
Before we go, does anybody have any questions they'd like to ask Ernie? Come on, somebody's got to have something. Jeff?
What brand of ink do you use?
What?
What brand name of ink do you use when you make
it? Any waterproof ink.
Just any one?
Yeah, but not Pelican. Pelican is very sticky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have to dilute it a little bit. But when you dilute the pelican, it starts to be less waterproof. But any Higgins, you know, the Japanese waterproof ink, that's good.
Now, that's a refillable pen that you have then?
Yeah.
So you can just put the ink right in that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there was a period of time where a bunch of really talented artists came out of the Philippines, and you all aspired to work in North America, in the North American comic book industry.
Yeah.
What was it that drew you to the North American comic book industry?
We were influenced by American comics way back then, and then it's a challenge for us to come here and, you know, work alongside with them. And besides that, we get better pay here.
Yeah. And was it, all of you that worked together, were you already English-speaking at that point?
Yeah, we're English-speaking back home.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's a second language for us. Yeah.
So it was no big deal. You just moved to the States and away you went.
Right. Yeah. Away we went. And it's fun all the way down.
Yeah. So there's no culture shock. What part of the Philippines were you originally living in? Were you in Manila or...?
I'm next to Manila.
Okay.
It's called Pasay City. It's next to Manila. It's just a bus ride away.
Were the Filipino publishers, were they all located in Manila at the time?
Most of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what type of comics? Like, I know Coaching did beautiful romance comics, boy-girl comics.
He does his own stories.
Right.
And most of his stories are novels, like... They're like installment in every issue. It's
right.
A continuation. And most of his novels got bought by the movie industry and made into movies.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Was he getting revenue from that?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
So he was fairly well-off.
He's
creator.
The number one comic artist
wow.
in the Philippines.
He's not known very well in North America, but...
It was too late for him to come here. And he is already well off there that he doesn't need to come here
sure.
and struggle.
Well, hopefully somebody will do a book on him at some point.
They have books on him already.
Really?
In the Philippines. Yeah,
no
compilation of his...
comic book work
comic
and
book
illustration work.
Yeah.
Because he did a lot of covers too, am I correct?
It's his daughter that did all
put
the...
This out. Well, that's something to try and find, then.
Yeah.
Maybe Bud Plant has it.
I have plans to buy some of those when I get have a chance. I will. Is my number one influence.
Number one influence.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I think
I started with him when I was about 11, 12 years old.
Really?
I started when I'm still in high school.
So you obviously drew from a very young age.
But he didn't like... give me a chance to apprentice for him.
No.
No.
But you met him, obviously, a number of times?
He's like only about 5 blocks away where I live in Pasay City.
Wow.
And I would go to his house, show him some of my sketch, and he would doodle in my sketch.
He would give you feedback and correct stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, what a wonderful way to learn.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But he never got a chance to give me an apprenticeship.
Would that be the traditional mode that many Filipino artists learn from? They would go to work in the studio of a master?
If I had a chance to apprentice with him, I would learn more from him.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But Tony De Sunuga taught me a lot. I learned a lot from Tony.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Ernie. Thank you for coming
it's
out and talking with us.
Yeah, we can
you
do
are
this
a wealth
again.
Of information, sir.
Thank you.